Welcome to Songwriter Trysts, an intimate podcast that is connecting songwriters from all over the world. I'm singer-songwriter Ray Lee. Music saved my life, and I want to talk to other songwriters about the power of songwriting, talk about their journey and how they got to where they are today. This is a safe space to share stories, lessons, and emotions, all the great things that build an amazing song. To support the podcast and follow our journey, you can find us on songwritertrysts.com. Welcome to A Songwriter Tryst with Jess Chalker. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me, Ray. It's really great to speak to you.
You too. And you are all the way in London, but you're from Australia. Tell me, how did that happen for you?
I am. So originally I'm from Sydney, but my husband was offered a job over in the UK. So we packed up our life in 2018 and brought everything, our whole house and our cats and everything across here. And we've been here ever since.
How did the cats travel?
They have official travel documents, so they're, you know, yeah.
Like a little cat passport.
Exactly, international jet setters. I was really worried, actually, to be honest with you. I was very worried about them. They were on a different flight. So my husband travelled a couple of weeks ahead of me because I had a big project in Sydney and I needed to finish up. And then the cats sort of travelled in between us. So they were, like, I was tracking their flight. I didn't track my husband's flight. I tracked my cat's flight. Yeah. So they like went to Singapore and then they went to Dubai and then they landed in London. So I was, and you have no idea as to whether they're fine, you know, if they're going to make it at the other end. So I was just, panicking. But that fortunately, they're absolutely fine. They were a little jet lagged. Cats, animals get jet lagged. But they were fine.
Glad to hear it. Very interesting, actually, because I don't think I've ever talked to anyone who's had to relocate their cats. So good to know. Little side note. All right, well, let's talk about you and let's go back to the beginning. Tell us, how did you become a songwriter? Where does that start for you?
When did I become a songwriter? I mean, I always dabbled around when I was a kid, but I never thought anything I did was particularly any good. And I used to just write joke songs with my brother. But it was mostly to make fun of my sister. But when I was at uni, prior to my time at uni, I'd actually lived in London once before. I did the working holiday thing, and during that time, my husband and I were just boyfriend and girlfriend at that stage, and we'd been together for a few years. He heard me singing, encouraged me to go get singing lessons, and anyway, it was a few years of then me kind of working out, oh, I'm kind of musical. Went to university at Sydney, did a Bachelor of Arts, and then started taking some music electives. And was accepted into a performing arts course there, which sort of opened up my whole world. And I started hanging around with musicians and songwriters and started penning a few of my own tunes and uploading them to YouTube. And YouTube at the time was like 2009 or something. It was just kind of getting warmed up and sort of sharing the songs around. So I guess it all started from there. I hadn't admitted to anyone that I sang and wrote songs, was uploading them to YouTube, and then it'll kind of start from that point.
I can relate to not telling anyone that you sing or play music.
Oh, really?
It's a very personal, intimate thing. Yeah, no one knew that for a very, very long time.
Wow.
I was a bedroom warrior for a long time. What changed?
When you say bedroom warrior.
Yeah, like I would sit in my bedroom, and if I knew that like no one was listening, I would like play my guitar or play my piano and write songs and let all my feelings out onto my music page.
I mean, yeah, I understand that because I think I was much the same. It's a way of, you know, I found it a very expressive therapeutic thing to do on my own.
Absolutely.
Wasn't something I was super interested in sharing with other people for the longest time.
No, God, no. Like, how vulnerable and scary was even the thought of sharing anything that was written in any way? Anyway, so, like, yeah, I completely relate to that. That was the most successful moment of my life was my first ever open mic because I was so petrified.
Oh, what did you do in your open mic?
Oh, at Palm Beach. And I'd been to Nashville and I did like one song there, but I had like a comedy song, which I kind of hid behind. And I just, I don't know, one day after Nashville, I was like, I have to do this. And I went to an open mic down in Palm Beach and breathe in deeply and just sang a few songs and then run away really quickly.
I think open mic nights are so great, and anyone who's kind of going through what we went through.
Yeah. Oh, it's good for that.
Yeah, being terrified to expose yourself. I think I wish there were more of them around. I don't know what it's like where you are. I don't see so many of them, especially after the pandemic. I think everything's getting back to normal. But the same with me, actually. Like, I remember my first open mic night, and I played a song on piano that I wrote, and I was shaking at the keyboard, and I had it was such a supportive space, and you know, you just keep going back and back. The more you feel, you know, gives you a little bit of confidence to keep going. Turn your heart into a stone. Take your cards and lay them low. I was afraid of what I faced. Every draw mistakes made.
It's like 10 other people and they're all feeling it, you know, they want the same thing for you, and they're there to share their songs, and they're scared as well. And so it is a very safe and supportive environment, and it's perfect to work on the performance side of being a songwriter and an artist. Unfortunately, the first night that I went to, there was a wedding rehearsal at that pub that night, and there was like 300 people in this pub. And I didn't know that that's not normal. And I'd worked myself up. I'm like, I'm going to go. I'm going to sing. I'm going to do it. I have to do this. And so, like, I just did it. And if I had have known that that was not a normal open mic night crowd, like, there's no way I would have done it.
Oh, so, my goodness.
There you go.
Wow. Anyway.
So I relate to the whole, like, you know, writing songs, and it's a way of therapy and getting it out. But you didn't do did you do the open mic, or did you do straight to YouTube?
I think I might have done the open mic night first, actually. Then I think I did YouTube after that. So there was people in my music class sort of knew. We were having to perform sort of cover songs and learn to how to perform. But I think it wasn't until halfway through that class that I started writing, and then after the open mic, I'd started putting them on YouTube. So yeah, it was a night in Sydney, super famous night called Woo Jam, and yeah, lots of people started out there. I think Matt Corby also, you know, I don't know if he did the open mics, but he definitely played a few gigs there.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, so you started putting it on YouTube. What was the process behind that? Like, or what happened from there?
I'd got a new Mac, and I remember it had this video recording software on it. I didn't even know how to use DAWs at that point. And I just started, you know, writing songs and recording them into this like video software, and then uploading them to YouTube from there. There wasn't really any, it was pretty spontaneous. There wasn't really any much strategy behind it. It's just let's see how these songs go and what people think. And it was also a way of me being able to see what resonated with people and how to write better. I almost sort of taught myself songwriting in a way from uploading to YouTube and through those little videos I did, and my songs sort of started got gradually better, I think, anyway, or maybe worse.
I think that's the goal, isn't it? Just like someone told me once that, like, your song should always be like at least 1% better than the last, and if it's 1% worse, maybe don't release it. That was their advice.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Mm. Yeah, I think we always, as songwriters, don't we? We always want to improve on our last thing. So it's not always really easy to do. Sometimes you just write something that seems so sometimes divined that you don't even know where it comes from. And then you try to beat that thing. I mean, I definitely fell into, but I did struggle a little bit because I remember one of the songs that I wrote on YouTube was called Said the Raindrop to the Sea. Ended up being quite like going viral on YouTube. And after that happened, I mean, a lot of opportunities came my way, but I did go through a period of writer's block after that because I was trying my best to beat that and I didn't know where that had come from.
That's beautiful, that can also happen too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had that experience. I have a song that I say I didn't write it, I sang it because I literally was just trying to work out how to use my doors. And I sang this song and it came out exactly pretty much how it's released.
Wow.
So like, you know what I mean? Like that divine feeling, I get that.
Yeah. Like, I think
you can take credit for it.
Yeah, I think there's something quite magical about that. And I think most songwriters have, you know, you've experienced it, I've experienced it, these instances where things just channel out of you. And it's a lovely feeling because it does make you feel, you know, like that, even if you're not a spiritual person, it does make you feel slightly like something spiritual has occurred. I find that that's my favorite creative state, is if I can get into that, like that channeling mode. It sounds a bit kooky, but it's really, I mean it in terms of,
it's a creative
flow where it's almost like meditation where you're just so focused and you're so kind of in the moment of creation that you're just, you know, you're channeling whatever is coming through you rather than trying to overthink things or be too analytical about it.
I like to think that it's my inner child, like that deep consciousness within my body that doesn't often get a voice because it's so suppressed by, you know, the world and society and responsibility and all that other stuff. That's just my reasoning, you know. It's like that inner child having a voice.
Oh, I think definitely, whether it's your inner child or whatever it is.
Whatever
you,
it is.
that thing that's just coming out and that needs to be, it's that voice inside you that you are like suppressing and that needs to be heard.
Mm.
I mean, I don't know about you. I don't always like to write autobiographically because there's only so much content that, you know, as a happily married person, I feel that I am reaching for. I do really like to try and come up with stories that I think is really interesting because whether or not that's coming from my inner voice or, you know, I don't know. It's like, I don't know what
do
novelist.
You find,
it's like, yeah. like a novelist.
Do you find you're a very observant person though? Like I do a bit of people watching and I quite enjoy it. You know, I'll go on a public train just so I can like listen in on people's conversations, not in a creepy way, but like, I don't know, I find it really interesting and I get a lot of content from that.
Definitely. I think being really aware of the world around you. I know what you mean by not being creepy. It's not, yeah.
Just always listening.
It's not, yeah, you're always just sort of aware and in the moment.
Yeah.
Definitely I derive a lot of, you know, content and inspiration from that. And I think the lockdowns during COVID have been really hard for me and maybe, I don't know about you, but a lot of creative people where we felt this like intense pressure to be prolific and to be creating, but then not being inspired by the real world. I found that really difficult.
There were a few songs and groups that even came out from it. And I kind of got over the lockdown song. Here's my isolation song. Here's my
keep
distance. And I was like, okay, like that is people taking, I guess, inspiration from a bad situation. But
I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, but it did start to feel a little bit like it. Yeah, I know what you mean.
I was depressed. I had some people telling me that like Jesus was coming back and we all, you know, all the zombie apocalypse was happening and like, I don't know. And it was pretty crazy at the start, especially.
Yeah, I mean, it's still, I think, the division that it's sort of caused and is quite worrying. I think people have coped with this pandemic in really interesting ways. Yeah.
How's it going over there? Because you guys are kind of fully opened up now. You can travel again. Different to what we're dealing with here at the moment.
Yeah, I think we're the 21st of October. We've been told we're not going into another lockdown though. We've got cases that are going up and up. I'm not sure. I mean the cadence of me seeing my friends has changed a lot, even though we're all out of lockdown and we're technically allowed to see each other. I think people are just more conscious of going out and seeing people, which is fair enough, I guess, but also it's a bit sad. You know, the life, there's a new normal that we're all sort of getting used to now. What's it like in Queensland?
I mean, well, we haven't had COVID for 15 days straight now, like nothing, but we're right. like the borders are all closed. But yeah. there was one guy just today, there was one guy that somehow went to Melbourne for 10 days and then came back. I don't know how he did it, but he's also an Uber driver and was in the community for 10 days. So I could be on the verge of my next lockdown. I don't know.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
But, and he wasn't vaccinated and so he's suffering to the point that he can't even talk to the people and he wasn't using the check-in app and all this really irresponsible yeah. stuff that I guess we just have to deal with. But it is... It's strange because before, I guess for me, and this is completely off topic, but like my husband's family are all in the UK and my family are all in Victoria. So we actually don't have any family support and we have three very small children. Mm. And we used to have, like we have a whole bedroom set up for family members because we would have every few months, we'd either have someone from the UK or we'd have my parents coming up to visit or they'd even pop up just for a week, you know, to help out. And then we haven't had that for 2 years. I am going insane. It's probably one of the reasons I started this podcast. I needed to talk to someone. But it's definitely put a whole new perspective in my mind into like getting to know your neighbours and being involved in the community and like seeking that support from the local people that are in my immediate vicinity and not relying on people that live, you know, hundreds of kilometres or miles away.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, it must be so tough having three kids and not having the support. I feel for you. I think, I don't have kids, but it's still, I can just imagine. And I mean, we've got a spare room. We have no kids.
Mm.
Well, we've got a spare room. and
you got cats.
Cat lady. We had visitors. We had visitors coming to see us all the time. And it was so nice just to have this constant stream of people coming to visit and, you know, in that interaction, which you just take for granted, and then suddenly, you know, no one. Mm. And in the UK, we've been here for 3 years, and I've got a few good friends living here, but we don't have anywhere near the sort of network that we had in Australia. It's different culturally here too. It's harder, I find, and a lot of expats I know find it harder to make really good friends here. Whereas I used to spend a lot of time in the States, and again, the culture is very different. It's very warm and welcoming, and people, you know, you've met someone once and they've invited you to a Sunday barbecue kind of thing.
Yeah, sorry, really fine then. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think I just thought with the lockdown ending and things kind of emerging that, you know, everyone would be like, right, that's it, let's pick up where we left off, but it hasn't really been the case. So it's just going to take some time, I think. What a weird time.
It's so strange. All right. So let's talk about your music. So you had a bit of writer's block. Let's go back to that. How did you cope with that? Because I haven't actually talked to that many people about writer's block and I guess the strategy of processing through that experience.
Yeah, it was really tough. I couldn't write for a really long time. And I remember it was around the time I think I'd been invited on the road with Lior. I'd barely played a single show when he was touring nationally, and I ended up kind of joining him for the East Coast leg of his tour. And it was when Passenger wasn't well known, but was spending quite a lot of time in Australia, and we became friends at that point. And I remember sitting down and having a conversation with him about it and just saying, look, God, like, I don't know what to do. I've had this song that's gone well and I don't feel like I can write anything better. And I feel like an imposter. And he just said, you know, it's if it's in you, it's in you. And it's something that's always stuck with me because Not that I think it necessarily made me like go, right, I'm suddenly now immediately out of writer's block, but I think it helped me to sort of overcome that like imposter syndrome I was definitely going through as a result. And I think there's a book called The Writer's Way. I don't know if you've heard of it. I can't remember the name of the
author. I have heard of it. I don't know if I've read that one.
It's a really great book. Hang on, I'm just going to look. It is by Julia Cameron or somebody. No, sorry, Sarah Maitland, I think it's. By Sarah Maitland.
Okay.
But anyway, the way that they advise you to approach writer's block is to just basically sit down and write and write and write until, you know, until something comes out of you. Basically what we were talking about before, like it getting you to enter into that channeling state, that meditative almost state where you're focused solely on, you know, creation and not all of those outside things that distract us. And I started applying that as a technique, and it did help me. I just found I started writing songs, and rather than throwing things away, because I just have a tendency to be very hard on myself and think this is crap, like I'm not even going to finish it. Mm-hmm. I would just work through, you know, a bunch of songs that I felt maybe weren't so good, but it just got me, the process of doing that got me back on track. Yeah. Where I felt, okay, at least I'm being productive now and I'm creating something that maybe I don't like as much, but I'm creating something that will hopefully lead me on to that thing that I do like. And I think we've lost that a little bit with this culture that we're now in that is very singles focused and doesn't and has sort of taken away the album as I feel like the album is such an important construct for artists and for musicians, because you know, you think of all your favorite records and all of the songs that it took them to write their great song, and often they had to write that whole record and all the album fillers to write the single, and I think that's a really important part of an artist's process. I think, you know, this pressure that we put on ourselves to like write a hit song every song, it's not right, is it? I like
that. I haven't heard that point of view before. Obviously, I've heard a lot of other reasons around the marketing and release and blah, blah, blah. People don't listen to more than one song, yada, yada, yada. However, I do actually really like that process. And for me, I feel like an album or even like a decent EP is more about capturing the artist's life and their like where they're at in that moment that body of work is released. You can really get an idea of what they're going through and where they're at in their life. With like a body of work, whereas if it's just a single, you don't really know where that's come from or what it is or what it represents. Like, does that make sense to you? No, that's how I feel.
That's exactly the same. And you think you probably put it way more articulately than I did. I think a body of work is definitely very symbolic and indicative of where that artist is in that moment. Yeah. And you get a sense of who the artist is from an album, whereas with a single, I just don't think as much. There needs to be like this more elaborate sort of marketing like exercise around a single to sell, you know, the story of an artist. Whereas an album,
also totally get it though. Like on the marketing side of things, I get it. For an album, you're going to spend four times as much than for a single, and probably get just as much exposure, I guess, and reach with a single as you would with an album. But it's a different process. It's a different
thing. Yeah, I think definitely. Like, I mean, and especially now, like there's just so much content. Everyone's a content creator, whether or not they're a musician or a novelist or like an Instagram influencer. Everyone's got something that they're touting. And, you know, you're right, like, this is the day and age that we live in, like where you put out single after single. I think I'm just a bit old school in that way that I like, you know, but also I was really lucky with this record that I'm putting out next month, that I was lucky that I had an Australia Council grant that helped me put it together,
because
it might not have been something that I could have afforded to do. I'm not, you know, I'm independent. Yeah. I don't have a record label that's paying for it. So, you know, I feel privileged to have that blessing.
Yeah, that's awesome. So how did that come about? What's the Australian Council?
The Australia Council for the Arts. Yeah, I recommend you look into it.
I will.
It's a really amazing government body that supports Australian artists in, you know, creating a new body of work, or you might be writing a novel or a play or an album. It supports artists from all across the spectrum, basically. And so, earlier this year, I spent a lot of last year. I sadly lost my job kind of mid last year. And while sniffing around for something to do, I had all of these songs sitting in my laptop, and I decided that I would, you know, finish this album that I've been working towards for a really long time. And early this year, I wrote a grant for the Australia Council and asked them to pledge some money to support me in the release of it. So that's really why I've been able to do this.
That's amazing. I was so grateful to them for supporting you in it. And tell me, what does it mean to you? Like, this is a pretty huge release for you. What's the process behind it? What are you hoping that it does, and where it takes you?
It's funny. I think In terms of where I'm hoping that it takes me, I've been really lucky to have had a, you know, a really cool career as a songwriter. I've worked in Australia and the UK and the US, and I've worked with some great artists. I do actually think of myself as an artist first and foremost, and derailed by circumstances. This album, I think, it's something that as an artist I've always wanted to release a record. In terms of where I'm hoping it takes me, I'm just hoping that allows me to continue, you know, an artistic path in some way. I have pretty, you know, reasonable expectations of what an independent artist is capable of exacting on a world stage with a limited budget. But I really hope that people who are meant to will find it and hear it and enjoy it, and that the songs kind of strike a chord with the right people.
Is there a running theme that you, have you analysed your songs and worked out kind of what you think the sort of theme or the messages behind the music is?
Yeah.
Not that it's not going to be interpreted however it is people interpret it. That's the beauty of music. But
yeah, of
what
course.
Is it to you?
I think to me, it took me a really long time to come up with the album title. I stewed over it for a really long time. And then it sort of came to me one day, Hemispheres, because I had spent so much time between the North and South Hemisphere, for one, just, you know, working as a songwriter, and then also having this other corporate life. So I have felt throughout my life, actually, you know, I grew up as a Jehovah's Witness, and then I had a whole bunch of friends that weren't in the Witnesses. I felt that I've had this real duality to my life. So I think Hemispheres speaks to that, speaks to the right and left hemispheres of the brain, of, you know, using one side as for artistic things, creative things, and then using the other side for kind of, you know, more corporate like styles of work. And yeah, and plus, yeah, constant traveling and upheaval. I'm such a nomadic person. I feel that Hemispheres really, really just speaks to these, like, yeah, this duality that I've had in my life. Yeah.
That's
Does that
really
answer
cool.
your question?
No, I love that. And I find it really hard, honestly, if people ask me these questions, you know, like, what's your purpose? What's your brand? What's your sound? Like, all that sort of like markety type stuff. But I love hearing what the music means to you and what it is you necessarily like want people to feel out of it. And like, I've written songs and then someone's like, you know, related to the death of a child now. Like, I haven't had that experience, but the fact that they took that from my music made me realize that people will take your music however they want to take it. But I think it's beautiful to hear what the artist feels and connects to it, you know, what the story behind it is for you.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. People will always, I mean, that's what we sort of hope for as writers, that we can, that our experience is universal enough that it's applicable to a whole range of human experiences. I could tell you exactly what each song is about to me, but I wouldn't want to ruin, you know, someone else's experience of those words and what it might kind of mean to them. So
why don't you just tell us what your favorite one is on the album?
I think there's probably two favorite. I'll say there's a song called West Hollywood, which feels deeply personal to me, which I wrote when I was staying in West Hollywood as a songwriter, and I was living long distance from my partner, and that the lyrics are very, very, very earnest and hard on sleeve. And then there's another song called Dance in the Rain, which was actually the very first track I released from the record. I actually released it a couple of years ago along with the video clip. And I wrote that one. That was really when I was coming out of, you know, a lot of long corporate projects. And, you know, I had a friend who was really kind of wanting to do something different with his life and need a little coaching out of that land. And I had definitely found freedom kind of moving on from that world. Like, you can earn, you know, it's great to earn lots and lots of money, but if you're miserable and you're working, you're chained to your desk till midnight, which at the time I was, it's no life. So
Can
you?
Oh yeah. 8 years of corporate just mess. Yeah.
I mean,
not anymore.
Yeah, I think you just need to evaluate. I mean, it's different though if you've got, you know, you've got a family to feed and you've got kids, and if, you know,
it was a good experience. I'm not going to say it wasn't, and it paid mat leave for all three children, so there was benefits to it, but I think we have to take that from everything we do, you know, to learn from it and let it shape us.
Yeah, I mean, I think it also depends on the type of, you know, a job is a job. It's so much about the people that you're working with too and the experience that you have. If you work with a wonderful group of people, then it doesn't really, you know, you could be working for an incredible charity that does, like, that, you know, promises to turn the world around, but then if you're working with terrible people, you're going to have an awful experience.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
I mean, there's a balance between purpose and, you know, and being happy in the environment that you're in. I think, but being an artist in amongst that, it's tricky because not everyone can who you work with can relate to.
I found it soul crushing, but but that's okay. So we won't talk about corporate because I have very strong feelings about the corporate world. I want to know about co-writing. Have you done much co-writing, and what's your advice around, you know, how do you prepare and go into a co-write?
Yes, obviously. I have worked as a songwriter, as a professional songwriter, and I've done a lot of co-writing. I guess I could talk about it from the perspective of being a songwriter for someone else or preparing to co-write as an artist going into a session, which I think probably is a bit more relevant to our chat. I think if you're an artist going into, I mean, I was always very, as an artist, I was always super against co-writing because I felt that if I didn't fully write the song, then it wasn't purely from me. And I held on to that for a long time. And I think that, I think the going through the period of writer's block and then, you know, my first few songwriting sessions where it was really enjoyable to just connect with another human being for a day and then just come up with something, I started to think differently about it. I don't think that's the case at all. I think you can create something that is still very uniquely you as an artist. Yeah. And then you have the benefit of having another person there that can help you to shape your ideas or to, you know, make you just think a little bit differently. I mean, we all, as songwriters, we all have, you know, the phrasing that we do all the time, or we have our lazy habits that we just do. I think having another person can push you out of that. And so for a lot of this record, actually quite a number of the songs are co-written, where I've either kind of left, there's a couple, So Cynical, a track that I released just today, actually the music was already written, which is totally unusual for me. I usually like to be very much involved in writing the chord progression, or the melody often just won't come to me. But in that case, Dan had a bit of a chord progression already. Dan Long is this amazing producer and co-writer and mixer that I worked with in LA for the song. Yep. He already had a track, and I had a great idea for a melody that he sort of helped me to finesse. And then I put some lyrics down, and then we sort of worked together on the production. He really took the lead, and that was a really amazing experience. And, you know, we came up with a track that I might not have come up with on my own.
Yeah.
So I think it's really just allowing yourself to, handing yourself over to the experience and not, some people still feel as though they never want to do that. I know a few artists that, you know, are quite successful who just completely flat out refuse to co-write. And I think it's to their detriment, actually. Yeah. What do you think?
Oh, I love co-writing. Some of the best songs I've ever written were co-writes. So because, I accept my flaws. Actually, I think it was when I was in Nashville where I was so inspired, and I actually had the penny dropped where I realised I didn't have to do everything myself.
Yeah.
I think coming from Australia and knowing very little about the industry, I had this weird, stupid belief, now that I say it out loud, that I had to write the whole song. It had to be amazing. I had to be able to produce it. I had to be able to do the music video, and I had to be able to do all the PR and the business and do it all myself. And just the idea of, like, having to do absolutely everything was so overwhelming that it was like, why even bother? Like, I'm never going to be able to do that. Mm. And then I went to Nashville and I just met all these songwriters and was blown away at how everyone there works together. Like, they just collaborate, and that's like, this guy's really good with bridges, and this guy's really good with melody, and this guy's really good with these types of songs. And, you know, it's like, actually you can just get like a team of people and you can all work together and do one little thing really well, and then let someone else take the reins on the things that you're not so good at. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's I think that's right. America seems to get a lot more than – I think Australia's – I mean, there's loads of co-writing that's happening in Australia and people, you know, coming on board. I'd love to see females more championed as producers. I do think that we still have a very – there's still a very masculine – as much as everyone, you know, talks about, oh, we've got all these great, like, singer-songwriters who are female and – mostly it's males who are, it's mostly guys are still producing them, and
it's guys and, still know, managing guys still own the record labels guys yeah. you know yeah it, it's similar to the corporate world, you know. Equality is still
it's talked about and it's a work in progress, and you know it's really in progress, you know.
We're taking steps in the right direction.
I think so. I mean, I still haven't seen the Four Corners episode on Dennis Hanlon, the CEO at Sony. But I know, I mean, I know that there are most of the artists in the Sony house have not come forward and said anything because, you know, they don't want to bite the hand that feeds them. It's mostly employees of the company that have complained about the treatment they receive there, not the artists. So, I mean... That says a whole bunch to me as well, that people are still really afraid of coming forward and putting themselves on the line. They don't feel safe to do that. And I think we really need to ensure that people do feel safe to come forward, because things are not going to change until, you know, we have those artists, you know, really.
Yeah. You've got to follow your intuition. And I think as women, we also need to learn our power and, you know, kind of take it back a bit. And again, that's a whole nother podcast, but I think we can do it by being strong women and strong artists ourselves and inspire others that it's possible. You know, that's all we can do, really.
I hope so. I think, I don't know if you would have probably seen that recent Triple J tweet, the ageism that sparked this whole ageism conversation in Australia, especially around ageism and females, you know, female songwriters.
And ageism is so much more prevalent to females than it is males.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, you can a 35-year-old guy or a band can bring out a record. That's fine.
That's the perfect album. Yeah. But if it's a 35-year-old female, forget it.
Yeah.
Your boobs are starting to sag, love. Sorry.
Well, that's right. And there's Poppy Reed, who's the managing editor of Bragg, wrote a really great piece in the Industry Observer. It's like as soon as, you know, the old white men in the boardroom stop fantasizing about you, you're done. Like that's it.
But terrible, isn't it?
It is funny. I mean, I still find that a lot myself, and I'm in my 30s and releasing my debut record, and you know, of course, I think about ageism, and I think about, you know, the outlets that just won't promote my music because of my age. But I also just don't care.
I don't care either. I'm in my 30s and I've released my first single like last year. Like,
oh, it took me a while, but
I don't care. I like went to a talent competition. Like, I got a finalist in this festival, and I went up there and I played, and I was first, thank goodness, because I would have freaked out afterwards, because I was the only, there was more than, like, everyone was teenagers. Like, the oldest other person was 19 and I was 32. And I'm like, why did they even put me in this? Like, I thought it was really mean of them. As soon as I found out everyone else was teenagers, I was like, I don't want to win. Like, don't you dare give it to me, because teenagers need the encouragement. So I don't need this. I'm going to do this whether you like me or not, you know. Like, but it was a really surreal experience being a new artist going into, I guess, an industry that sets up beginners to be young.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if you were only 32 and that was only last year, I just think that's still so young, you know. I think that anybody who's in their early 30s thinking that they are too old, it's just ridiculous, isn't it?
No. You're never too – my grandma used to always say you're as old as you feel. And I don't know, I'm a big believer that it doesn't – you're always the perfect age. There's nothing you can do about it anyway, you know. And like, I've got three kids, and a lot of people would say you shouldn't do it as a mum, but there's heaps of artists out there that, like, Pink's a mum, you know. Like, it's not a thing, but people will project their own beliefs onto you, and you just got to get over it.
I'm just not sure why being an artist, we sort of, It's like every other profession is allowed to age gracefully, and it's acknowledged that the older that you get, the better that you become. Like as a lawyer, you're going to be probably a much better lawyer at 45 than you were at 21 when you've just finished uni. So, you know, you're going to be writing a bit about different things. You're going to mature, and you're going to have a different perspective to share, you know, than you had when you were 22 and you were breaking up with your second boyfriend. You know, it's a different stage of life, and there'll be people that are at the same age of your life that will, you know, will totally get what you're saying, as opposed to so it is silly. I mean, I think you've just got to find where your audience is, and that's really, I think, especially now, like we were talking about before, like this, everybody's a content creator. It is harder to find an audience now than ever, but you know, if you can find an audience that, you know, one person loves it, a million will.
Just funny. I do like what you're saying about, I like how you said for women, we're not allowed to age gracefully. It's like, I actually agree. Like I look at, like, you know, women who have had a really successful, you know, like Cher and Madonna and Dolly. And I'm like, they've, you know, I'm pretty sure all of them have had extensive surgery to kind of maintain their youth. And like, actually, that's kind of sad, really.
Yeah, I mean, if everyone has whatever anybody wants to do to preserve or, like, well, you know, I don't know how I'm going to feel when I'm 70. I like to think I'm not going to ever have a facelift, but who knows, maybe when I'm 65 or 70 I will want one. Give me that facelift. But I also think they've come through the worst of it, haven't they? Mm. I wonder how it's going to be. For younger artists now, I'm really inspired to see, you know, like artists like who are in the mainstream, like Halsey, who's just had a baby and who's just put out this incredible record, which has this amazing artwork of her being this empowered mother, basically breastfeeding her child on her album cover. And that's like, it's like, hell yeah. Like, this is where we're going, you know.
And that's promising, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's really cool. And I think I saw, what's her name, from The Preachers, Isabella Manfredi, was in the song that she released recently. She was pregnant in her video. And I was just like, that is so cool. Like, I just want to see more of that. I wish that, you know, I'd had that role model when I was young, I think.
You just have to do it, don't you? Yeah. Okay, I'm going to get this podcast going. We could talk about this for a long time. What's the best advice you've ever been given in this industry?
To ignore the industry, I think everyone wants to find commercial success in some way, and everybody looks to the industry to enable that for them. I think, you know, the most interesting cases of success I've seen have come from people who followed their own path. Like a really close friend of mine, Kina Granis, she's American. She was signed to Interscope. She won a Super Bowl competition, and she was signed to Interscope based off this great song that she wrote. And she decided to ditch this really fancy recording contract to follow her own path and to create the music that she wanted to create, to not kind of have to feel that she needed to sexualize herself. And she's got a great career now. You know, it's not maybe the one that, you know, she does a lot of cover songs, but she writes beautiful songs. She's an incredible songwriter, and she's built up this amazing Spotify following. Like, she's got 5 million Spotify followers per month, and she's got some crazy million number of, like, YouTube subscribers. Yeah. And she's done it completely independently. Passenger is another one. I mean, he had the benefit of Ed Sheeran sort of, you know, helping him out a little bit, but he was someone who eschewed record labels and went on his own way. And it took him 10 years and he bust, and he's made it. It can happen. Like, you have to put in the time and the hard yucca, but, you know, it can happen. But I think
are a lot of people out there being successful without having to be that successful. Like, you can still have a successful business without having to be, you know, super famous.
Of course. I think also that's another thing that people don't realize. You can have, there are all of these other laneways for a successful business. Like, if you know, I know people who have no plays on Spotify but make millions of dollars in sync. Like, there's other careers that you can have. So, yeah, the best advice I've been given is to learn the business learn the business, you know, of running. You're an artist, but you're also a small business owner, unfortunately. You just have to resign yourself to that fact. You have to, you know, pay your bills somehow. Ignore, you know, forget industry pressures. People will come to you once you've built the audience, and hopefully you've built the audience your own way and you have created something that you are proud of and that you've not had to make too many compromises. So
I like that. I really like the idea of, and I love the people that connect to my music and the people that come to the shows and the people that buy the merch and, you know, message all the time and support the art.
Yeah.
Like that's what it's about. All the awards and the magazine, like all, you know, all the other kind of stuff that we do to get awareness out there, to reach those people. It's important, but it's not the end of the world. You know, it's not the be all or end all. It's you don't need to win a Grammy to have a meaningful connection with someone through your art.
That's right. Yeah. You've just got to have an audience that is sustainable and focus on what you need to do that. Forget the industry.
And constantly get better, like you said, which is really good. If you could co-write a song with anyone in the world, living or dead, who would it be and why?
Oh, living or dead. Gosh. I mean, I'm a huge David Bowie fan. So I'd say, and I'm a huge Paul McCartney fan. Maybe I would be so interested to see. I think I'd have to say Paul McCartney. I feel like that's fairly cliche, but I would be so interested to see what his process is. I think, you know, whether or not he like writes the lyric first or the melody or the music, and how gracious and generous he is or otherwise in the songwriting room.
I would like to know too. I'd love to have him on the show and just pick his brain. He's like, tell me. Show me your ways.
Do you have imposter syndrome?
Oh, I'm sure everyone's been through that at some point. I think it's a rite of passage in life to just question. Because if you don't question it, then you can't find out the answers. And it's only once you have the answers of who you are and what your purpose is that you then can have the confidence in that that's who you are and that's what your purpose is.
Yeah, or maybe it's just a constant journey of finding out. I don't know. I also feel like I've never quite landed on my exact purpose. I feel like if I had, I would stop searching. Like we're always searching for whatever it is. We're always on this onward journey towards something. Yeah,
you'll find it. I think there's. I talked to someone and they said everyone has two lives. There's like the life that you have when you're growing and then there's like the second life and it. And you know once you're in your second life, I think. But I remember I was always very like, what is my life about? What does it mean? Like I just, you know, I was so desperate to figure it all out. And I think I'm just enjoying the moment now and like life is just about having fun.
That's it.
And just doing the next thing.
I think it's exactly it. And when you said, you know, you'll find it, I'm not sad about it. I think this is this realization that, you know, life is, I hate the word journey, but life, you're always on this like forward path, discovering new things. And I think once you let go of who am I, what's my purpose, I think you become a lot happier in yourself. And I definitely have because I'm not, I just recognize that the search is what makes life great and I'm probably never going to find the thing. And maybe if I find the thing, my life wouldn't be worth living anymore, I would lose my zest or my spark for it. I always want to be on this road, you know. I always want to be searching.
That was like my last official question. So this is the part of the podcast where I open it up to you. You can share, you know, whatever it is you want. I'm going to put all your socials, your links, people can go find your music and connect with you in the description of the podcast. It'll also be a featured blog on the website. So people will be able to get in touch, follow you and, you know, listen to your new album and just support you, our fellow Aussie in London. Is there anything else you would like to say or share?
No, I think just like a plug for my record. So my debut Hemispheres is coming out on the 5th of November. I hope there's something on there for everyone. I think there is. And yeah, the songs mean a lot to me and I'm just really proud of it and hope it finds its way in the world in whatever way. I figure it's also just a part of what I leave behind in this world too. So
That's awesome. Well, I'm really looking forward to it. We're going to do what we can to support you and promote you as much as possible. We're all going to go and listen to it right now. But, yeah, thank you so much for joining me and sharing so much of your journey with us and helping us all learn. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on your show. It's just so lovely to chat to another human being, like in general at this time.
Oh, literally, like this is the whole reason it shut down. My husband was going nuts with me talking his ear off. He's like, go do a podcast. And 12 months later, here we are. Thank you again. Thanks for joining our songwriter, Tris, today. To join the family and keep up to date with future podcasts, you can follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Please leave a review and subscribe. To support the podcast or contact me or our guest, please go to the website songwritertrists.com. The crowd, no one can hear me. Wish I could.